You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. I am Commander Tom Garcia, and this is the American Hour. Welcome to the USA Talk Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. Of course, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Paula Lozon Osman. How are you today, Paula?
Doing great, Tom. How are you?
Excellent. Had a busy day, and then I'm flying out tonight to Sao Paulo, Brazil. And we'll be broadcasting from there tomorrow and Friday. Of course, you're not going to be joining us on Friday. Can you explain to our listeners, our, you know, steady, I can't think of the right word, you know, folks that follow us every day and are there for us all the time, why you have something more important to do on Friday?
I am going to meet my schoolmates, one of which is traveling up from Maryland. I haven't seen most of them for 24 years, and I have to say that social media and Facebook is a wonderful thing, and we connected, we found each other, it was great, and we've been talking all along, and we used to sit next to each other all through high school in homeroom, and we're going to go watch a comedy show in Providence, so it'll be a good out.
All right, you get a pass on that one. That sounds kind of important. That sounds pretty good. But I got to say, 24 years, no, that's not, shame on you. No, I'm kidding. There's lots of friends I've had that, unfortunately, one of my really good friends from high school is in jail now. He'll be in federal prison for quite some time. So I might go visit him in prison one of these days. But anyway, not all my friends were like that. So, all right, so we will be broadcasting, and joining me as my guest co-host, and of course, if you've listened to the show before, you've heard him on the show before, as one of our commentators and just joining in on the discussion, Dick Bierenbach from Port Orange, Florida. He'll be joining in as the guest co-host, and he's got some good stuff he wants to talk about. And we discussed it, so boy, I think at the beginning of the week, and said, well, let's save it for next week or Friday when you can guest host with me. But we've got Matt Falconer, who's going to be calling in a little later on in the day. And Matt is an interesting guy. He's done a lot of great stuff, for Orange County in Florida, Central Florida, Orlando. Very involved in politics there. And we'll talk to him about some of the politics. One of the things he posted on Facebook was a Florida Republican, and we're talking about Thad Altman, a Republican senator, blast Governor Scott for misinformation. And actually, that was Ed Dean put that out there. I've got, let me find it. I just pulled it up, the article that Matt wrote. Now, let's see. He wrote an open letter to Thad Altman. He says, "This week you accused the duly elected governor of being a liar because of his statements in defending his decision to deny federal funds for high-speed rail. After reading this letter, I ask you to offer Governor Scott an apology. I attended a meeting with Congressman John Mica, who confirmed Florida's rejection of its $2.4 billion award for high-speed rail actually reduced the federal deficit by $400 million. Well, that can't be a bad thing. My gosh. The reduction was part of the $38 billion in spending cuts as part of the last congressional budget compromise." So we got some rhinos here in Florida, and Matt's good at pointing them out and helping those of us know what's really going on in Florida politics. He also has been involved in authoring a Tea Party budget proposal for the federal government. And so he's done quite a bit of analysis of the other budget proposals by both the Republicans and Democrats and anybody else out there. So we'll ask him a little to talk to us about that, what kind of stuff he found in those budget proposals. You know, we've seen a lot in the media, but I guarantee you Matt will have found some other things. And let's see. Before we get into that stuff, I want to talk about just a couple things. You probably heard in the news that the White House has got this rapper coming who's written some controversial music about killing troopers and in support of Black Panthers that kill troopers and that kind of stuff. I find it disgraceful that the White House would defend this, and they know exactly who he is. And, of course, you know, Mr. Carney, the – Carney, I love that name. I wonder if he was a Carney said that, you know, that this guy, the rapper's name – I'm not going to say the rapper's name. I'm going to give him any press – has been praised by many, including Fox News, for positive work. Well, you know, you could do positive work, but if you – let's say, for example, you're a rapist and you did a whole bunch of charitable and positive work – does that charitable work erase the crime that you committed? No. Now, this guy hasn't committed a crime, but we know lots of young people listen to these rappers and, you know, are influenced by them, and I don't think people are going to go out killing state troopers just because they hear this rap. But I just think the kind of person that would put this together is not somebody who's working for the good of our kids or anybody else. They're just trying to create something controversial to sell music. So he's more interested in selling music, and I realize that's what he does. He sells music, but, you know, how about a little responsibility in selling your music? So I think it's a huge mistake, and it just goes to show that this administration is really quite hypocritical. They, you know, side with terrorists and other folks when it comes to, you know, giving them civil rights, but then, well, in fact, let's take a look at what the administration had to say, and I think I've got it here. Let's see. Maybe I don't have it. I got two computers once again going. Let's see. No, I think I got rid of it. Well, you know, we've got an administration that attacked President Bush for his methods of interrogating three top terrorists. That was it, three top terrorists. And, of course, having Gitmo and et cetera and promising to close it within 1 year. And how many years has it been and it's not closed? And how much information have we gotten from those terrorists because of the waterboarding we did and enhanced interrogation techniques? So they claim that that's bad, that that was bad, but then it's good, the information we got. And then here's the most hypocritical thing. We can't waterboard a known mass murdering terrorist, but we can kill one. No physical harm, no lasting physical harm to a terrorist who has been waterboarded or made to sit in a cold room and listen to Black Sabbath backwards for 24 hours. No physical harm whatsoever. But a bullet through the head, that's A-OK. That's A-OK. These guys are absolute hypocrites. But now here's something that I talked about, Paula, last week, or, well, it was right after the raid, and that helicopter that got left behind is a stealth helicopter. I've never even seen one. And I said, the Pakistanis are going to give it to China so that China can duplicate it or try to and then sell them back to Pakistan. And guess what is in the news as of yesterday? Sure enough, China wants it, is heading to Pakistan, and the Pakistani officials are saying, we think we're going to let China take a look at it. Uh-huh. So I was right. Once again, I knew right up front that that was going to happen because that's what always happens. I mean, I've seen all kinds of aircraft that the Soviets have built in the past and aircraft that we've built. And China figures out a way to get a little bit of information. Sometimes it's just a matter of looking at it. You know, I used to go to a lot of different air shows just to do a static display. Never flew in an air show, but would fly an F-18 or F-14 or F-16 into an air show and stand there. Even did an A-4 once. And there are people coming around taking photos claiming to be very close-up photos of the landing gear and everything else, claiming that they do it for model. And there are a lot of people legitimately doing that so that they can create models that kids or people put together, you know, set on their desk, plastic models, and they want to be accurate. But I know there's always going to be some people in there that are doing it to take those close-up photos back to other countries so that they can duplicate them on full-scale flyable airplanes. And that kind of stuff goes on. So I predicted that, and I was right about that. Let me see. It's on my other computer that I had Matt Falconer's stuff. He was the founder of the Orange County Taxpayer Review Board, and he's the author of Building a Better Local Government. And I'll tell you what, Matt knows about local government and running and managing a government. So, and the book is very well written, and actually anybody can read it. And then he also ran for Orange County mayor. Now, What else has been in the news? Let's see. I saw this caught my eye today, or actually it was May 5th came out, but I just saw it today. A renewed crackdown on redlining. What does that mean? Well, the Obama administration has stepped up its scrutiny of disadvantaged neighborhoods' credit access. In other words, forcing banks to give loans to disadvantaged neighborhoods. You know, the way they say that, disadvantaged, you know, it's true. They're disadvantaged if they go to a Mercedes dealership to buy a car. Yeah, they're at a disadvantage because they don't have money.
Right.
But it makes it sound like somebody else has caused it, and it's not their fault. And so we've got to loan them money that you and I, Paula, couldn't get. Now, yeah. I know for a fact, firsthand, because my wife has a lot of family up in Canada, they have had no mortgage meltdown, and home prices are rising in Canada. And do you know why? Because they don't loan money to anybody to purchase a house unless you have 20% to put down. That's it, period. But they must have lots of disadvantaged neighborhoods in Canada. I guess they must, but nobody's complaining about it. And the main thing is their economy isn't in the tank like ours is. So there you go. So the same people, really, and what this article, and I'll tell you who wrote it, Clea Benson. And this is, I found this on Bloomberg Business Week. And what she's saying basically is this administration is doubling down on a failed policy, the Community Reinvestment Act. 1977, which started under Carter, and it kind of dwindled away under Reagan and Bush, but then Clinton brought it back, and then, of course, we got guys that like Barney Frank and Chris Dodd that just jumped all over that as soon as the Democrats were in power in the House. 15 months after they jumped all over that and really spooled it up, all of a sudden, oh, to their great surprise, economic meltdown in the banking and mortgage sectors. Well, it wasn't their fault. It was George Bush's. Yep. George Bush, he's behind the Community Reinvestment Act. And now they're doubling down on it and are going to push more for it. So get ready for more problems with the banking industry and the mortgage industry. Let's see if I got any other – I don't have any other headlines. But I was on the Ed Dean show today, and we talked a lot about immigration. And he really wanted to kind of focus in on it, and I think he's probably right, the fact that – we're going to end up with a compromise on amnesty. We're going to end up with a compromise, and he asked me what I thought it would be. What I think it is going to be is we're going to come up with some form of a guest worker program and maybe not even a pathway to citizenship, just a guest worker program to allow people to work in the U.S. and a compromise on the DREAM Act. I can tell you, I can show you in the DREAM Act precisely how a 37-year-old illegal immigrant who's never been in the U.S. can come into the U.S. and within 2 weeks be on the fast track to amnesty under that plan, because it's full of loopholes. And here's the problem. Undocumented immigrants are just that, undocumented. There's no way to prove how long they've been in the country. The DREAM Act revolves around kids that have brought into the country prior to the age of 8, and they're poor old kids, it's, you know, not their fault, and they've lived here and now they're older, and we want to give them a pathway to citizenship. Well, the pathway is join the military. A lot of people say, oh, that sounds good. Well, they're not citizens, and we're going to put them right into the military immediately? Yeah. Well, we do have programs for foreign nationals, and typically it's been with people from the Philippines, and they cannot come into the military as an officer. They must come in as enlisted. So, you know, if you're not a citizen, you can't be an officer in the military. So there, we got that one thing going for us. But there's that pathway, and then there is if they have completed high school and go to college and can get into a college. Well, the bill made exceptions to allow them to help them, and the states will do that to help them. So at the expense of our kids who are trying very, very hard to get into a decent school, we're now going to flood the applications with people that now have a special leg up because we want to help them, and we're going to help them, and they're not even citizens. So we're going to help non-citizens at the expense of citizens. But here's the kicker to it all, waivers. I guarantee you, Paula, you will see tens of thousands of waivers. You're going to have some 12-year-old kid or 18-year-old kid or 25-year-old kid or 37-year-old former kid say, I've been living in a tent and under a bridge all these years, and I never got to go to school. There's no way I could, you know, go to college right now. I'm a hardship case. Boom, stamp approved. They can waive all of those requirements. And then, once they're on the pathway to citizenship, guess what they can begin doing? Bringing family members into this country. It's a thing called chain migration, and we're going to see it in large numbers. Yet at the same time, we're still going to see tens of billions of dollars being sent back to their home countries as they legally work and now work for higher wages, which I honestly believe that illegal immigrants, the way the Democrats portrayed them, living in the shadows, are treated like slave laborers. The money they make, I think it's inhuman, and I think it's a terrible thing. But you know who one of the biggest supporters of not using E-Verify and other things to crack down on illegal immigrants? Chamber of Commerce, because it hurts business. It's bad for business not to have cheap slave labor. Well, I've got news for them. Once all of these people are legal, they will unionize, they will get minimum wage at a minimum, but they will unionize and their wages will drive up. Goodbye, cheap slave labor, Chamber of Commerce. That's precisely what's going to happen. But then here's the secondary thing that's going to happen. Those businesses that were used to that cheap slave labor are going to start looking for new immigrants who haven't gotten into the system yet and say, I will hire you over one of the now legal immigrants because I can pay you less. And if you want to get into the system so you can make more money, then I'll fire you. So we'll be back to a sort of a black market illegal immigration system where businesses are looking for folks that aren't in the system and they don't have to pay them full amount. And you're going to see now illegal immigrants being told, hey, don't go into this pathway to citizenship thing, or you know, you're just going to end up on welfare and you're not going to be able to get one of these good paying jobs or any paying job. But that is another enticement. Well, gee, the guys, people that are picking strawberries in Central Florida, they don't want to hire me because now I get at least minimum wage, or now we're unionizing and we're going to get $25 an hour. Well, I'll go on welfare. Hey, that's actually paying me more money than working in the field for illegal immigrant pay. So there's a whole host of problems this brings to the forefront, these kinds of compromises. But I'm afraid, Paula, we're going to see a compromise, and you and I are going to once again foot the bill for another social agenda compromise, courtesy of our liberal Democrats, and something that they have no authority under the Constitution to be involved in. Now, they do have the authority to come up with a naturalization plan. But to come up with a naturalization plan that violates federal law, which I'm going to tell you the federal law, anybody that comes into our country illegally has committed a federal crime. So what they're really going to say is, we are going to write a bill that says, although you violated our federal law and you're a criminal, we're going to reward you. But if you go and rob a bank or you commit some other crime, well, then we'll prosecute you. But this particular crime, we're going to reward you. And do you think that's going to slow down the flow of people illegally into our country? Absolutely not. It's going to accelerate it. So the whole idea about let's give amnesty to these people and then figure out how to stop them from flowing into our country is backwards. It's putting the cart before the horse. We need to stop them from coming into our country first. Then, if we'd like to, figure out maybe some way to work with the people that are in our country. But we've got to stop the flow by giving them a path, an immediate pathway to citizenship after violating our sovereignty and federal law. We're only going to entice more. We're going to see the numbers of people coming from other countries increase, and we're going to see it increase dramatically. So we know that when we've seen states crack down on illegal immigration, we see it reverse. We see the numbers coming into those states dwindle, and they go back. Where? They go back to their home country because that's what they know. So here's the other thing, Paula. Why is it that we feel so sorry for somebody who steps across our border? They're poor. They can't speak English. They came from a rough country. And they're hiding in the shadows, like the Democrats say. There are people hiding in the shadows in Darfur right now. There are people hiding in the shadows in Europe. There are people hiding in the shadows in Poland, in Russia, in China. Why aren't we scouring the planet and bringing every single person that's hiding in the shadows to our country? How come we're not going to those lengths? It's only if you make it across our border that then we're going to help you out. But if you can't make it across our border, we have no compassion for you.
Yep. And I don't have an answer to that, but could I play devil's advocate for a couple of seconds here? There is
a plaque
at the Statue of Liberty, and I have yet to go see the Statue of Liberty, that says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore, send these, the homeless, tempest toast to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. But on the same page, I will say that charity starts at home and not with the old man on the corner. I still want to know why. We're on this tear with dealing with the immigrants, and it's not just, you know, what goes on south of the border. It's immigration in general. I want to know why we're not dealing with the Appalachians, why we're not dealing with our homeless, why we're not dealing with our veterans that need the assistance that they need.
Exactly. Well, it's because our liberal friends jump on to a cause, and then once they're on to a cause, they really don't care about anything else, and they don't care about the damage in the wake of their achieving that cause. So immigration reform is sort of like healthcare reform. You know, healthcare reform could have destroyed our nation the way it's been done, and will ultimately destroy our healthcare system, the best in the world. It will just be mediocre like what everybody else has. And we'll do an entire, we can do an entire show on the healthcare system, because I have a good friend who wrote a book on how to reform the healthcare system, and this was before Obamacare came out. He did a lot of research. I've done a lot of research myself, and so I know quite about a lot about the system. I used to do some consulting work on patient safety in the healthcare system, and there are a lot of areas that need some attention, and it's not about cracking down on the big, bad insurance companies, which, by the way, the oil companies getting this bad rap. We'll come back to – I want to say one more thing about immigration, but the oil companies getting this bad rap about making all this money. I keep seeing people on the news saying, we're going to take away their subsidies. They don't get one subsidy. Zero, zip, nada, not a thing. They get tax breaks. They get the same tax breaks that all manufacturers in the U.S. get. There are no special oil subsidies or oil tax breaks. They get the same. So really what they're saying is, we're going to take five major companies in our country because they make more than anybody else. It's true, because we all use gasoline. I mean, that would make sense. We all use gasoline. Let's say there were only five companies that provided food. They'd be making money. They'd be one of the biggest companies in the country because we all eat food. Okay. We all use oil. There's five major oil companies or companies that provide gasoline, refine it, and provide gasoline in this country. So they make a lot of money. But they only make 10 cents on the dollar. Google makes 30 cents on the dollar. Apple makes 25 cents on the dollar. Why aren't we going after those big bad companies? Well, they're not nearly as big as the oil companies. But here's what we're saying. We're going to selectively pick out five companies and take away the tax breaks that the law says they legally can have, and yet allow other manufacturing companies to continue to use those tax breaks. We're selectively taking money from companies simply because of how much they make, and to demonize them. Well, if we're going to take those tax breaks from them, what the Congress needs to do is eliminate the tax breaks for all corporations, all manufacturing corporations. Well, they don't want to do that because that would run some of these companies out of business. They need those tax breaks. So we're going to selectively do that. That's absolutely unconstitutional. If you're going to tax companies, it must be done in a uniform manner. You can tax based on a percentage of how much they make. You can raise the percentage, so the more they're making, the more they're paying. And I absolutely believe a progressive tax rate is unconstitutional, but that's how we do it. But what they're talking about is absolutely unconstitutional, and it's immoral. It's absolutely immoral. Just because they're making more money. They're making more money because we're all using their gas. They provide something that we all want and we all use. So this administration going after them and calling it a subsidy. And then I heard a Democrat on the TV this morning saying, the federal government is giving these companies $4 billion a year. Federal government's not giving them anything. They're not giving you $4 billion a year because of the tax breaks. It's their money to begin with. What they're really saying is the federal government's losing out on an additional $4 billion in taxes. But see, they don't like to use the word tax because Americans don't like hearing about people or companies being taxed and taxed more and more and more. So they've turned it into a subsidy that the federal government's giving them, which is an outright lie. So anyway, I wanted to just jump on that because I heard a bunch of that on the news today. But as far as the immigration thing goes, now Paula, tell me if you can argue with this, okay, this explanation of why we need to give amnesty to this group. They're poor. They came from a poor country. They are just trying to provide for their family. They're doing everything they can. They're homeless. They don't hardly even speak English, and in many cases, they're illiterate. How does somebody argue with that case of not giving amnesty to a people like that? Well, it's a tough one, and the reason I ask that question is this. I wasn't talking about illegal immigrants. I was talking about shoplifters.
Really?
Did everything I say apply to tens of thousands of shoplifters across the country? Absolutely. That's a big part of the demographic. Poor, just trying to provide for their family. Homeless.
Yep.
Don't speak, illiterate. Don't speak English well. Came from a poor country. Well, how come we're not all up in arms about the shoplifters? We've got to give them amnesty, Paula. We've got to let them off the hook. We can't prosecute them anymore. We have to let them come and steal things from Walmart and Target because they're just poor people and they're living in the shadows.
Well, I don't think that the majority is actually aware of that. And the fact that they feel that it's because they're only poor people and not really shoplifters, I would think would begin to change their minds on the issue.
Yeah, exactly. Look, they come here knowing they're breaking the law, but they also come here knowing that they can get away with it because we've let them. So why not do it? and then the economic aspect of it, they send so much money back to their countries, so much money, tens of billions of dollars that we're helping those economies. And that's why a country like Mexico encourages their people to come up to the States, even if it's just, you know, for a season to work, because they're all sending their money back home. They're sending it back home to – it doesn't matter who they're sent to. They're sending family, obviously, but
yes,
it's helping their economy. It's helping their economy tremendously. So instead of them really working to help their economy, the politicians and the government there, they're getting the United States of America to help their economy at our expense. So anyway – That was my thought on that, and we talked about it somewhat on the Ed Dean Hour today. Now, let me tell you about somebody we've got coming on tomorrow, and I don't think I did earlier. Did I tell the folks about Nicholas Gutierrez?
I think you did it very briefly.
Okay. Tomorrow, Nicholas is kind of a short item thing. I had been asked if I wanted to have somebody come on from the Florida Energy Forum, and I said, of course. And they said, when would you like to have him on? He's available, like, right away. Oh, okay. So the chairman of the Florida Energy Forum is going to come on tomorrow, Nicholas Gutierrez. He's the chairman. And we're going to talk about what's the name of that pipeline? I've already forgotten. But anyways, the pipeline that's coming from Canada into the U.S., that could bring enough oil from Canada, and we already get the majority of our oil from Canada. See, we don't want to destroy the planet, so we won't drill our own oil. But we'll let the Canadians, just a little north of us, drill all they want there. I mean, not let them. We have no choice in that. And that's A-okay. But anyway, I would much rather give our money to the Canadians to the north who don't have a mortgage problem, who have a good economy, and don't have any banking crisis up there. I'd still rather give them our money than Hugo Chavez and Iran and the Saudi Arabia and anybody else in the Middle East. We literally could increase the flow of oil from Canada to the point where we could stop all of our Middle Eastern and Venezuela oil. He's going to talk to us about that tomorrow. But this thing, like typical, our politicians are like hemming and hawing. It's been studied for 3 years. It's a good plan. And that's what he's going to talk to us about tomorrow, about this plan. So it'll be interesting to see, and it'll also be interesting to find out. I haven't researched it yet, but Paul and I will research the Florida Energy Forum and find out more about them before the show tomorrow, and we'll see what else they're involved in. So we got that going for tomorrow, and then, of course, Dick Bierenbach on Friday. Now, I've got an audio clip to play. I talked about this earlier in the week, and this was Joe Biden talking about waterboarding. Let's see what genius Biden. well, you know, hey, before we play this, I was talking to somebody earlier today, Paula, somebody you know, and asking them, why do you think Obama picked Joe Biden to be his vice president? And as I've pointed out on the show before also, Mark Levin calls Joe Biden the dumbest vice president we've ever had. And that's only second to the dumbest senator we've ever had. That would be Joe Biden as well. in my research, I think Mark Levin is probably right. But in any case, why would Obama pick Joe Biden to be? And the answer was because he didn't want somebody smarter than him. So let's see, he had to pick the dumbest, the completely dumbest guy? Well, my thought then was he must have picked the dumbest guy because maybe the somewhat dumbest guy that he would have picked, smarter than Biden, might have actually been smarter than Obama. So he had to go to the very bottom of the barrel to ensure that he didn't have somebody smarter than himself. That's not saying too much, is it? But let's play Genius Biden's statement on waterboarding. And this was Bob Schieffer that interviewed him on Face the Nation, February 14th, 2010.
Ever envision a time when waterboarding should be used on anyone?
No.
No.
No. It's not effective.
It's not effective.
Correct. It's not effective.
Let's talk about.
Now listen to this guy. Is he on drugs or antidepressants or whatever? You know, is there ever a time that waterboarding should be used? There's a pause. You had to think about it. No. No. Not effective. Never should be used. Well, I guess it actually should have been used because it worked. So Genius of Biden, once again, was wrong. He's the same guy who in the vice presidential election said that global warming is absolutely a proven fact. Absolutely a proven fact. Scientifically, absolutely proven. First of all, there's nothing absolute in science. And second, there's nothing absolute about Joe Biden because he's always wrong. Well, that's the absolute, actually. He's always wrong. I'd like to ask Joe Biden, in the past eight ice ages, which occurred in the last million years of a planet that's 500 million years old, but in the last million years, the eight ice ages, who stopped those ice ages and started warming trends that lasted anywhere from 40 to 100,000 years? Who did that? Who was behind that? And do you think that we are somehow in control now and that we can control? Now, I said I was going to talk about global warming one of these days, but we can talk about it a little bit here now. Paula, do you know how much CO2 is in the atmosphere?
I do not.
But most people don't. It's 0.03%. 0.03%. Do you know what percentage of that, well, not percentage of that, but what percentage man actually contributes to the atmosphere? So if what's actually in the atmosphere is 0.03%, let's take only the carbon that man puts in the air. How much is that as a percentage of the atmosphere? It's 0.0004%. It's minuscule. It's minuscule. It's not causing global warming. It can possibly, something that small. Imagine taking a superheated water droplet that would be the size of that in comparison and dropping it into a gallon of water. Well, how big would that little droplet be? It'd be the size of the head of a pin. Could you warm up that water, even one iota, even measurably? No. Another example, because when I go to the beach, I have to sit under the shade. I've spent way too much time in the sun all these years, and not good for you. Don't do it, because when you get older, you'll get to go to your dermatologist every year and have stuff cut off. It's not fun. But in any case, so if I were thinking, how much CO2 is in the atmosphere? How much CO2 is in the atmosphere that I would sit under a 9-foot by 9-foot umbrella and turn that, I'm going to try and do this, 9 times 12 on my calculator. Oops, I hit 12, but it came up 11. It's an old calculator. And here we go. Times, well, that's not the right number, but you're looking at dividing up the umbrella into 1-inch squares, and you come up with about 9,600 squares. 9,600 squares. It's maybe 9,300. That's a lot of little 1-inch squares. Do you know how much just one of those squares or how many of those squares you'd have to cut away to represent CO2 in the atmosphere? 1/3 of one square. It wouldn't affect you at all. Could you get a sunburn? Even if you sat right under that little teeny hole, it wouldn't affect you. Movement of the sun would constantly keep shifting the intensity, et cetera. Okay, so I wrote the EPA and asked them, how is it that you're determining and labeling CO2 as a pollutant, but not other greenhouse gases, some of which are more prevalent in the atmosphere? And you know what their answer was? Because we can't control them. We're only labeling pollutants to the ones that we can control. So in other words, they're not calling the most prevalent greenhouse gas a pollutant because we simply can't control it. But what they're saying then is we would call it a pollutant if we could control it. We can't control it, but it would be a pollutant if we could control it. Do you know what that number one greenhouse gas is? Of course you don't, because you didn't research any of this. I did all the research years ago on this. The number one greenhouse gas that exists in, on average, 3% in our atmosphere are the nice puffy clouds you see outside right now. Water vapor. Water vapor is the most prevalent greenhouse gas. 3% of the atmosphere is water vapor, 0.03% is carbon dioxide, and 0.0004% is the amount that we as humans actually put into the atmosphere. So the clouds that you see every day, apparently if our government had its way, they would try to eliminate because those clouds are causing global warming. Yeah, we need to get rid of water vapor, clouds, and rain. Bad stuff, bad, bad stuff. But since the government can't control clouds and rain, we won't call it a pollutant and we won't do anything about it. But we'll go after the minuscule CO2 that we have really, for the most part, some control over, but in reality no control over, because the rest of the world puts out as much as it wants. And there have been some climate arrangements, but typically the poor countries really don't have to participate. They pump out as much CO2 as they want. It's us, the big, bad United States of America, that must be controlled and tied down for something that has no effect on the – it's one of the biggest scams in the history of our world, global warming and CO2. So anyway, here's my take. And I'd love a liberal to please call in. Please call in and explain to me when the last ice age ended, the peak portion of it ended, and I don't remember how many tens of thousands of years that lasted, but when it finally ended and a warming trend started – who started that warming trend and who kept it going for 60,000 years? Who did it? I'd like to know. But they can't give you an answer on that. They just say, well, it was nature. Oh, nature. But no longer is nature in control of the atmosphere. We are. Interesting. Very interesting. It's a bunch of baloney.
Tom, how about if the government takes the taxpayer money and gives it to the scientists to figure out how to deal with the clouds then?
I think we should sink billions into research on how to reduce clouds and rain. I think that would be a great idea, because that would be a significant reduction in global warming than CO2. But I guarantee you there will be scientists that will say, oh, no, no, even though the CO2 is very, very small, it's much more potent than water vapor, much more potent. All right, well, I want to go on a campaign to get clouds labeled as pollutants, because I think they're polluting our skies, they're polluting our lands. Every time they dump rain, just a big pollution thing, because it is a greenhouse gas, and greenhouse gases are known to be pollutants, according to the EPA. So I think Joe Biden must be heading up the EPA these days, because they're not too bright over there. Yeah.
He might.
Well, did you see anything? Oh, I wanted to point out a couple other things on the show.
Go ahead.
If you go to France Cabreau, and he's been on the show, you can go see on our archives. If you go to usaradionetwork.com, go to my page, you will see all the past shows there. You click anywhere in there, and it'll take you to where all the archives are. Look and see what the date was that Franz Cabreau was on, and he came on and talked a little bit about stolen history. Another naval aviator like myself, great book. It's getting great reviews, and there's a link to his website on my page. And he's a supporter of the radio show and page there. But he put out a couple things recently on Facebook. And here's the first one that I saw. Let's see. Oh, man. Now, I put it on my webpage, my page, but then it didn't come up, his statement. So here we go. He said, did you know the first black Republican senator in U.S. history was elected 123 years before the first black Democrat senator? Uh-huh. Yes, our first black Republican senator, or first senator in U.S. history, the first black senator was a Republican. Let's see. He put out another good one also. I've got to go to his older posts. It was just there this morning. But, okay, he said, now, if you think he's racist, go take a look at his page. Take a look at his page and see if he's racist. I'm colorblind. I can't tell, you know, somebody's racist or not. I mean, I can tell by their statements. But when I look at people, I really don't see it. But if you think he's – Franz Cabreau is racist, then you please go look at his website. You call me and tell me if you think he's a racist. But go take a look at him.
Sorry.
Yeah. here's what he said. He said, did you know the first official slave owner in the colonies was black? Yes, he was. Being a slave had nothing to do with the color of your skin. There were black slaves, white slaves. It was all about how you were brought into the country. And we all know that blacks were the ones that were grabbing blacks from other tribes, enslaving them, and selling them to not only the United States of America, but all over the Caribbean and South America. We were not the only country doing it. The big, bad United States of America owes everybody of color money and whatever else the liberals say, because we were the only ones doing it. Not true. But anyways, yes, the first official slave owner in the colonies was black. So if you think these things are shocking to you and not what you thought about history, you need to go get his book, Stolen History. Go either to my Facebook page or the site USARadioNetwork.com. Go to my page there, and you'll see a link, and go check that out. Now, I got a call from George Taylor today. Very excited call. He is the president of the National Veterans Homeless Support, and they've been doing fantastic work in Central Florida, and my old town of Titusville, Florida. Actually, that's not where he lives, but that's where I was living. And I got very involved with the veterans organizations there, both American Legion, VFW, Navy League, and, of course, his group, the NVHS. And one other group there that's a very cool group, it's the USA River Rats, kind of a veteran motorcycle group, but, man, they do so much charity work, and so they're a great group there. But George Taylor called, and he's going to have a big announcement, and he'll be on the show next week. I don't know what day yet, so we'll get it on the webpage, and we'll Twitter it out and get it on Facebook as soon as we find out. But he's going to be on to talk about this big announcement. He's either going to be able to go public with it tomorrow or Friday. I don't know yet. But as soon as he does, we'll put out a little bit about it, and then we'll have him on the show next week to talk about it. But it's big. It's big for veterans and big for his organization, and I applaud him for all the hard work. He's also been recently assigned the position of the chairman for Veterans Homeless Affairs, or I don't know the official title, but for the entire state of Florida for the VFW. So good man, great organization. And if you want to find out more about them, there's a link on my page. Once again, you can also go to NVHS.us on the web. And, of course, they have a Facebook page. Just do a search for NVHS. But great organization, worth donating to or getting involved with if you happen to live in the area. But very nice organization. I like them. And, in fact, it's time, I believe, for a commercial which advertises the NVHS. We'll be back in about a minute.
National Veterans Homeless Support, or NVHS, was formed by veterans for the sole purpose of locating and assisting the more than 4,500 homeless veterans living in the parks, forests, and streets of Central Florida. Their mission is clearly defined, to eliminate homelessness among veterans in Central Florida, and they work very hard to accomplish this mission. They offer a very unique service to the community in that they are the only organization that goes out into the field searching for the veterans, providing supplies where they find them, and working with other organizations to get them out of the woods and back into society. If you go to their website, it's located at nvhs.us, and you can also find them on Facebook. Their Veterans Resources link on their webpage is worth its weight in gold, so please go check out the website, and if you're able, make a donation. They do a very, very valuable service to the veterans of Central Florida, and we'd like to expand this and see it expand to the rest of the country.
We're going to wait for Tom to come back. Saw something on the Twitter page that former House Speaker Newt Gingrich announced via Twitter. He is a candidate for the 2012 GOP presidential nomination.
Now, you know, I forgot to unmute my microphone there. Thanks for filling in, Paula. Yeah, George is going to be on next week. Big announcement coming in the next day or two, and we'll have him on talking about homeless vet issues, the Veterans Administration, a whole host of issues that concern veterans next week. And he's very, very knowledgeable. He's been working this for a long time. And he, in fact, we'll get him to tell his story, but he was homeless himself at one point many years ago. And, pulled himself up by the bootstraps, got himself going again, and decided, you know what, I saw a lot of other homeless folks like myself out there, veterans like myself, and I'm going to do something about that. So I believe he's an electrician by trade, but he's very – and Parish Medical in Brevard County there has provided him with a very nice office in one of their hospital facilities or healthcare facilities. And they've been doing just – they've just been plowing ahead, doing more and more and more. So we'll talk about all of everything they've been doing up to this point, everything they plan to do, and, of course, their big announcement. So we're looking forward to that. All right. Let's see. I think Matt might not be showing up today. he actually reposted my press release posting, you know, a little Facebook press release thing on his site today. I saw it, that he had done that. So it's not like he forgot. He might have gotten tied up with something or whatever happened. You know, maybe he got stuck in traffic, et cetera. So we're going to press forward. But, again, tomorrow we've got here we go. Nicholas Gutierrez. Yeah, we just arranged this morning, literally. So Nicholas Gutierrez of the Florida Energy Forum, and then Dick Birnbeck co-hosting with me, and he's got some stuff on education, what's going on in the education system of our country to talk about. And then next week we'll have George Taylor on sometime, not sure exactly when, but we'll get that on the website as soon as possible. Now, you can follow the American Hour on Twitter by going to the American Hour. Do a search for the American Hour and you'll find the Twitter. And if you want to follow Paula on Twitter, it's Megawatt Queen. And on Facebook, it's the American Hour Radio Show page. Just do a search for the American Hour Radio Show, and you can find the page. It's not a person. It's not me, but it does have a photo of me. Actually, we need to get a photo of you on there too, Paula. Finally got a photo of you on the web page, and, of course, we've been doing more with the web page, getting more sponsors on there and putting more information. And I'm going to go that and read that to you because there's a link there about the Florida Energy Forum that I think is important. And I meant to do this at the beginning of the show, and I forgot. So we're going to do this. Remind me, Paula. Of course, you won't be here tomorrow. But remind me for the next week or so to keep doing this, and I'm going to go to the link that we put up on the USA Talk Radio Show page. Here it is. The construction of the proposed Keystone XL pipeline, which will connect vast amounts of Canadian crude oil to American refineries, could reduce our reliance on oil from Venezuela and the Middle East by 40%. Okay, I said earlier completely, so I was wrong about that, but 40%, that's huge. That's going to make old Ugo, piss his pants. So I think we need to do it just for that reason alone. Rather than, do you know what you speak Portuguese, but in Spanish, sapo is the word for a frog or a toad. And I swear that's exactly what Ugo looks like. If I ever ran into him, I'd say, usted parece como un sapo. Say, you look like a frog or a toad. Because he does. His face looks like a toad. Anyways, his whole body and everything is like a fat toad. Anyway, I shouldn't be picking on him for the way he looks. I mean, you know, those are his genes. He got what he got, right? But he acts like a toad. He acts like a toad. Okay, rather than depending on unstable nations for our energy resources, the pipeline will allow us to work with friendly neighbors in North America. Yay! Unfortunately, while the project's plan has been researched for almost 3 years, delays blocking its development continue to be introduced. For this project to become a reality, the State Department is now requiring public comments on this project by June 6th, 2011. Okay, so we got a few weeks. Now, to learn how you can help out, they're holding webinars, okay? And on if you go from the link on the USA Talk Radio page, my page, the American Hour, follow the link. It takes you to another site that I have, and we'll take you right to this page that talks about the Keystone Pipeline. The links are there. Today there was a webinar. It's already come and gone, but I put this up this morning. Tomorrow there's a webinar, then next Tuesday, next Wednesday, and next Thursday. They're 30 minutes long, and they give you, the attendee, a better understanding of the pipeline and explain how the public can submit comments to support its development. So they run from 2 to 2:30 p.m., and I believe that's Eastern time. I think when you sign up for the webinar, it'll tell you precisely what that is, Eastern time, and I'm pretty certain because the group that's behind this, the Florida power group that we're going to be having on tomorrow, they've posted that, and of course that's in Florida, East Coast time. So take a look at that. Sign up for one of those. Go listen to it. I'm going to do the webinar tomorrow. I'll have time tomorrow to do it before the show, and then I will tell everybody on the show what went on, what it's about, and how they can help out. But if you can, please go listen to that. And even if you can listen to one tomorrow and you find it valuable, send this out to your friends and neighbors and let them know that this is important. Let's start getting more of our oil from Canada and less of it from Venezuela and the Middle East. And this is a way that you, the average citizen, voter, can actually make a difference for a change. And I like those things, when we can actually make a difference. And when they do get flooded with public statements and comments saying, yes, this is what we need to do, it does make a difference. Now, why the State Department's involved in this, I don't know. But anyway, I mean, like, what do we need the Energy Department for when the State Department is handling, you know, public comments on a proposed pipeline from Canada? I don't know. I don't know what does the Department of Interior or Department of Energy actually do. I've looked at their websites before, not impressed. And just not impressed. But anyway. All right, Paula. So that's some stuff that's coming up here, and some good announcements, some good stuff, guests. And if we will reschedule Matt Falconer. I know that there's only one reason he wouldn't have been here, and that's because of something came up, something big came up, but we'll get him back. And let's see. What did you see in the news today that caught your eye, Paula?
House Speaker Newt Gingrich announced via Twitter he's a candidate for 2012 GOP presidential nomination. I guess that's something that everybody was probably aware of as the day wore on.
Yeah. I didn't know he did it via Twitter, and I follow his... He's got a Spanish version of Twitter that tweets about, Hispanic-oriented issues. Not always, but and they don't come out very often. And I follow that one, and I didn't see anything there from him on that. But then again, I'm following a lot of people, and so I may have just missed it. I would assume that he would have Twittered that out in Spanish. I would have to go look at that and see for myself. Now there is. You know, some other news that's maybe not big news, not huge news, but, it's sometimes interesting news. Like in California, Garden Grove cracks down on sexy coffee shops and bans nudity. Nudity? Well, they've got a little video of a scantily – she's just wearing a bikini. I mean, this is California. Go to the beach. You'll see people wearing bikinis smaller than this. But she's wearing a bikini in a cafe. It just says, it doesn't say what kind of cow, it's a coffee house. I don't know. What do you think about that, Paula?
Not bothersome to me. I mean, it's what they do out there, right?
Yeah, to me it seems like if a coffee house wants to have girls serving coffee in bikinis and you don't like that, then don't go to that coffee house. And definitely don't take your kids there. But then we take our kids to the beach. And, you know, I see some real whales wearing bikinis, and I see some guys wearing thongs that are so small that it's like, dude, what are you thinking? And it's just, you know, there are people of all sizes and shapes, but it just boggles my mind why some of the people of different sizes and shapes are wearing such tight, tiny little clothing, you know, so you've got some really good-looking men and women wearing some tight little clothing. Everybody kind of appreciates that, I guess, but then you've got people. But anyway, you take your kids to the beach, and it's embarrassing sometimes, and being here in Florida with so many retirees and old people, it's really embarrassing. You see old people, again, all shapes and sizes, wearing bikinis, wearing thongs. I'm like, yeah. So anyway, if I want to go to the beach, I want to go to the beach. I really don't have a choice. It's a public beach, you know, and there are some private beaches. I mean, the one near where I live is actually semi-private. You pay to get in, or if you're a resident, then it's just a one-time reasonable fee for the year. So here we've got girls walking around in bikinis in California, no less, and that's somehow bad. I'm not saying it's something I would do if I had a coffee house, but, yeah, anyway. I don't know. But here's the thing. Now, here's really the most important thing out of this. Local governments and states have the authority to do a whole lot more than the federal government. They have the authority to do something like this. It's up to us, the people, to pay attention, and if we agree with what the government's doing, fine. Then they can do it. They have that ability. If we don't like, we need to be vocal about it, and we can change those things. It's much easier to change things at the local and state levels than it is at the federal level, and that's why we want to keep the federal government out of our state policymaking and out of control of our states and local communities, because it's too hard to change that stuff at the federal level. So this is all A-okay if this is what the citizens want in that particular city. But if they don't, well, then they need to, you know, go and make some noise and do a recall, or, you know, tell their representatives there in the city council, no, we don't like what you've done. So anyway, that was one article that I saw, thinking, you know, because I lived out there in California when I was in the Navy, and people are, you won't see it too many other places, at least I haven't, but, you know, there's a sort of a culture at the beach, especially a surfing culture, and people frequently, you know, are coming from work or coming from somewhere else, and they just pull into the parking lot and strip right on down to, you know, their under shorts, and then maybe throw some other shorts on, or they'll just wrap a towel around themselves, and you can see they're pulling their undershorts off, undergarment off, and then throwing a bathing suit. So they're being, you know, respectful. They're not just walking around nude, but they're just doing it right there. I've been to plenty of places in the country, lived plenty of places where, you know, you wouldn't do that in public, but nobody cares, because it's just, hey, people come from, it's not like you make an outing of it on a Saturday. People are going to surf at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning before they go to work on a Monday, or coming out to surf at lunchtime or whatever. You know, you don't have a lot of options there for, you know, going home and putting your bathing suit on and then going to the beach and then going home again and going back to work. It just doesn't work that way. So everybody kind of understood that, and it was a sort of an interesting culture. But if that's what people are okay with, then I say that's what people are okay with. Anyway, I don't know. You ever see people do that at the beach there in Massachusetts?
Oh, yeah. We used to do that when we were kids, Tom.
Do you see adults doing it?
Huh?
Do you see adults doing it?
Probably. I mean, if they were in their cars or whatever, put the blanket up or something, you know.
Yeah. Well, I see, you know, I used to see it pretty common there in California, and nobody really cared. It was just not that big a deal. But, yeah. Anyway, so let's see what else. Anything else stand out to you? I don't know. You know, there was an earthquake in Spain, and it calls it a deadly quake, but it was, what, 5.3, 5.4? I guess it depends on where it hits, but I've been through earthquakes that size in California, and hey, it get you moving around, but not that bad. I wouldn't call it a deadly. It's a deadly quake, I guess, if somebody dies, but I think it's a little misleading to say a deadly quake, in that it does. That's typically not the size of an earthquake that is going to cause deaths. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. All right. Well, let's double check. Matt hasn't called in, and, well, almost out of time. All right, and I've got to race off to the airport, taking the train down there, go flying tonight. And I looked to see who I was flying with. One of the pilots is somebody that I used to be in the Navy with a long time ago out in California, and he's been a pilot with American Airlines longer than me, but I didn't know he was flying out of Miami. He must have just moved into the base, because I hadn't seen his name on anything. We've got a lot of pilots. But so this is going to be a fun, interesting flight tonight. We're going to spend the whole time getting caught up about what's going on. And, I mean, I haven't seen him since. I might have flown with him once back out in California a long time ago, but I don't know that I've seen him since he left the squadron that we were, the reserve squadron we were in. And that would have been probably in 96. I think is when he left. So it's been a while. So it'll be a lot of catching up to do. So it'll be kind of a fun flight tonight. Anyway. All right, Paula. Well, we'll see you tomorrow. And you can tell us more about your high school reunion coming up. And then, of course, next week you're going to have to tell us what happened. You're going to have to fill in all the details. But we will have our guest on tomorrow and talk about some more of this stuff and have some fun. And thank you for listening in. Don't forget, 4 o'clock tomorrow, 4 o'clock Monday through Friday, the American Hour, and thank you for joining us. All right, Paula, you have a great night.
Thanks, you too, Tom.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.